Well, imagine, if you would, a rock music concert. The wildest one that you could ever imagine. Imagine the lights and the music and the staging. And incredible things are happening on that stage. Things you just can't believe. All sorts of sexually explicit activity. Not just suggested, not just alluded to, but lived out almost like an X-rated show right there in front of your eyes. Imagine obscene language and people on stage treating each other with utter disdain and contempt, humiliating and mistreating one another. Imagine at the conclusion of the show that some people on the stage would go so far as to actually murder some of their fellow performers, actually kill them right on the stage. I mean, can you imagine a scene like that of absolute mayhem? I mean, Madonna's been criticized for her concerts, but something like what I just described would make her concerts look like a Barney the Dinosaur video, right? So where would a show like this come from? I mean, where would a show like I asked you to imagine, where would it ever come from? Let me read you the words of Jesus Christ from chapter 7 of the Gospel of Mark, verses 21 and 22. It says, "For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly." Out of men's hearts. You see, if we were to project the hidden contents of the human heart into a stage show, that's the kind of show that we would get. When you think about your own secret desires, your own secret fantasies that you don't tell anybody about. If you think about the bitterness that may be in your heart, you think about the jealousy, the aggressive thoughts, the words that you say to people you're angry at, you never really say them, but you say them inside of yourself. Think about that brought to life and projected onto a stage. I tell you, I would be totally humiliated if the secret contents of my heart were projected on this stage for all of you to see. Well, the reason I start this way, this message on Madonna, is because it would be so easy for us, many of us Christians, to sit here tonight and to take pot shots at someone like Madonna. And I'm certainly, believe me, friends, I'm certainly not endorsing all that goes on in her concerts. I'm not doing that. But at the outset, I want to put things into perspective by acknowledging the biblical truth that everybody has ugly stuff inside of them. The difference with Madonna is that she actually lives some of it out in a very suggestive way in public, and that makes some people very uncomfortable and makes her an easy target for people to slam dunk. But you see, Jesus Christ doesn't want to be in the slam dunking business, because the business of Jesus Christ is the human reclamation business. That's what his business is all about, human reclamation. In fact, one time we can read about in the Bible where a woman who was caught in adultery was brought before him. And yes, he did confront her about her wrongdoing and challenge her to stop doing that for her own good, but he also extended grace to her, and he also reminded and cautioned the religious leaders who were so quick to throw stones at her. He warned them, don't be too judgmental toward her without acknowledging that you too harbor secret sins in your heart. And so maybe as we talk about Madonna tonight, maybe Jesus would have something to say to us at the outset. Maybe he'd caution us as well. Just so we would remember about what really goes on in our hearts that other people don't know about when we start talking about someone like Madonna. And certainly few people in our country have been more popular targets for criticism than Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone. I mean, frankly, Madonna loves the attention that she gets. She says that pushing people's buttons, their hot buttons, by doing outrageous things is something that she really enjoys doing. One critic said, giving Madonna bad publicity is like trying to put out a fire with gasoline. And the publicity, both good and bad publicity, has propelled her into becoming one of the wealthiest and one of the most influential figures in pop culture today. And the publicity, friends, has been no accident. While music critics agree that Madonna is a good singer, and she's a good dancer, and she's a good actress, where she really excels, as a matter of fact, where some people say she is an outright genius, is in packaging her image and in marketing herself and in manipulating the media. In fact, in Madonna's own words, she said about herself, manipulating people, that's what I'm good at. And it has really paid off. In fact, you know, Forbes magazine, the business magazine, a couple of years ago, they had a big picture of Madonna on the cover, and the headline said, America's smartest businesswoman? The article described her as a savvy promoter who's the head of a half a dozen different companies with hundreds of employees and $125 million in earnings over 5 years. Her earnings have been tied to this uncanny ability that she has to create controversy. And there's never been any shortage of controversy when you talk about Madonna. A few years ago, Pepsi paid her $5 million to do 3 commercials. But after the first one was aired only once, Madonna then released a music video in which she danced provocatively in front of some burning crosses. And so religious groups pressured Pepsi into dropping her as a spokesperson. Of course, they let her keep the $5 million that they'd already given her. Her concerts became even more popular after police in Toronto threatened to raid one of them, and 2 of the concerts of hers were canceled in Italy because of pressure from the church. She received a ton of free publicity, including a whole night on Nightline when MTV censored one of her music videos. And of course, her book called Sex, with its sadomasochistic theme, created a tremendous ruckus when it was published last year, and that controversy helped it sell 800,000 copies at $50 apiece. I see some of you business people with the wheels. That's $40 million. Because it saved you doing the math in your head. So what I want to do tonight is I want to stir up a little controversy of our own about what Jesus might say to Madonna, which, by the way, is a big contrast from last week, if you were here, when we looked at what Jesus would say to Mother Teresa. As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was over at Barnes & Noble, you know, the bookstore, doing research for this series I was planning to do. And I was took up to the counter, to the checkout person. I had 3 biographies of Madonna and 3 biographies of Mother Teresa. And as she's ringing me up, I could see this look in her eye, and she... thinking, you know, like she wanted to say, you are one confused guy. I mean, but it's been real interesting as I've studied the life of Mother Teresa and studied the life of Madonna to see, you know, the contrast. Obviously, there are many that spring to mind, but, you know, one of the... but the one contrast really that gripped me was that Madonna is spending her whole life trying to please herself. And Mother Teresa is spending her whole life trying to please God. And Mother Teresa says she's absolutely happy and fulfilled. And Madonna says not only is she unhappy, she says, I don't even know anybody who's happy. I thought, isn't that interesting? Well, as we've been on this series in the last few weeks, what we've tried to do is, as we've talked about various people and what Jesus might say to them, we tried to pick out one word that would sort of focus in on what we want to talk about through the message about that person. And so for some, that was very obvious. You know, for Bill Clinton, it was the word leadership. For Michael Jordan, it was the word success. For Mother Teresa, it was the word servanthood. So what should it be tonight as we talk about Madonna? Any suggestions? I mean, it could be materialism, because she's a self-professed material girl. It could be sex. It's a title of her own book. Could be ambition, off of the title of her last concert series, Blonde Ambition, the tour she had. But after reading some biographies about Madonna, And after looking at some of her videos, and after reading a ton of articles about her life, the word that I came up with, that sort of summed up where I think we ought to go this evening, is the word seeker. The word seeker. Because I believe in her own way, Madonna is desperately seeking someone. She really is. She's seeking meaning for her life. She's seeking answers to a lot of spiritual confusion in her life. She's seeking acceptance. You heard her in the video where she was saying she'd come back to her hometown of Detroit. And she said, I know it shouldn't matter, but it really matters to me that, you know, these people accept me, that they see that I've made something out of myself. She's desperately seeking acceptance. She's seeking happiness that she said has eluded her so far despite her success. And in a way, I believe that Madonna is seeking God. You saw her in that documentary praying before her concert. Why does she pray? I think she's trying to connect with someone. So I think the word seeker might be a good one to look at tonight as we talk about Madonna. And not only that, but consider this for a moment. I mean, maybe you've never thought yourself as being a person for whom the term seeker might be a label. But I want you to stop and think for just a second and ask yourself, is it possible, considering, you know, the way that you've been chasing after things in your life, could that really be a search for sort of the missing puzzle piece of God that you've been looking for to complete your soul? Maybe you've never thought of yourself in the context of being a seeker before. Think about it tonight. And think about, even though your life may be totally different from Madonna's, think about it as what Jesus might say to Madonna. Consider whether those words might be words that would have meaning to you as well. Well, I think there is a lot that Madonna would hear from Jesus, probably a whole bunch of things. But I want to talk about what Jesus might say to her, not so much as a performer, as what he would say to her as a person. And I want to look at what Jesus would say to her that would be unexpected. Because as you read through the Bible, one of the amazing things about Jesus is he's always saying things that are unexpected. I mean, I always have this picture of the disciples, you know, with their jaws open, like, you know, because it seemed like he would say something, it would catch them. What did you say? It would just catch them so off guard. So what are some unanticipated things that Jesus Christ might say to Madonna? I think three things. First, Jesus might say, I'm sorry. Second, Jesus might say to Madonna, I understand. And third, Jesus might say, I'll help. I'm sorry, I understand, and I'll help. And those would be a little unexpected, wouldn't they? So let's talk about why in the world do I think that Jesus might say to Madonna, I'm sorry? Well, I could very well imagine Jesus saying to her this, Madonna, I am sorry. I'm sorry that your childhood experience with church left you with such a distorted and an inaccurate picture of who I am. Madonna, I wish that hadn't happened. Because you see, as Madonna was growing up, like a lot of people, maybe even like you, she developed a picture of God that, as you read about when she talks about God, that picture bears scant resemblance to the God of the Bible. Now, this isn't stuff that she was necessarily taught to be true in her church growing up, but this is what she walked away from her church, having the impression that is true about God. She grew up seeing God through her church as someone who demeans women, as someone who doesn't tolerate questions, as someone who enjoys heaping on guilt, as someone who issues capricious and arbitrary rules, and as someone who likes to find something wrong when anytime anybody is having a good time. And that has colored the way that she looks at God. And you can see that in her videos. You can see so many times such a brooding and an almost sinister symbolism representing God in the church. And it has prompted her to stay away from churches ever since. I mean, can you relate to that? I know a Christian who, when he goes out and he meets people who say they don't believe in God, you know what he says to them? He says, tell me about the God who you don't believe in, because I probably don't believe in him either. In other words, many people emerge from their childhood with misconceptions about God, and they have rejected God based on those misconceptions and not who he really is. I mean, that could be the case for you, couldn't it? I mean, maybe the impression of God that you got up in, that you got from your childhood church experience was that he's boring and that he's irrelevant to your life. Or maybe that God is distant and he is unknowable. Or maybe that he's eager to punish and to destroy your fun. Or that he's a God who prefers rituals over relationships. Or that he's unresponsive or powerless. Or that he considers women as second-class citizens. Or that he is the master of guilt and shame. Or that he's a Sunday-only deity. Or that he demands a blind and an unthinking obedience. I mean, that may not have been, you know, those things may not have been what your denomination was trying to teach you as a child, but so often people walk away with impressions that have more to do about the general atmosphere that they observed in their church growing up, or the way that people model things for them in very subtle ways. And they walk away with these kind of misimpressions, and they end up staying away from church for a long time. I mean, maybe you're back in church just recently for the first time for years in your life. Maybe you stopped looking to God for solutions and you started looking somewhere else, but you haven't found answers. So maybe now for the first time in a long time, you said, I'll give church a try again, maybe against my better judgment. You know, I think that that would really grieve Jesus, that you have such a misimpression of who he is since your childhood. I think it would grieve him. Because God created his church and he put men and women in it so that through the centuries it could communicate his truth and his love in an accurate way. And not only communicate it, but to model and to live out the kind of depth of loving community that he wants his followers to live in. And I'm so glad that God chose as his vehicle to use men and women in his church, because it has brought great fulfillment to them over the centuries. People have had great fulfillment and been used by God to communicate his message. But the other side of that is people are flawed. And while in many places God's spirit and his teachings have remained vibrant and intact, in some other places, unfortunately, the church has lost its way. And Madonna had a very interesting quote along these lines. She said this. She said, I think the church pretty much stays with you so that whatever was drilled into you when you were growing up, whatever your picture of God was, I think you die with that image in your head. Well, the good news is it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. In fact, the Bible says in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, the 6th verse, that those who sincerely seek an accurate view, the truth about who God is, God rewards that. See, here's the thing about God. It's so unfortunate for those who have such misconceptions about who he is. And that is that when you get past those misconceptions and when you come to an accurate understanding of who God really is, then he is awfully hard to resist. He really is hard to resist, because he'll show you that he is not a God of shame, but that he is a God who wants us to constructively face up to our shortcomings and to our wrongdoings in our life, so he can completely forgive us, so he can relieve us of guilt. The Bible says in Romans 8:1, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. He's not a God who arbitrarily issues rules to try to destroy our fun, but he is a God who lovingly gives us wise and sensible counsel to save us from doing things that ultimately are going to hurt ourselves or they're going to hurt other people. And he's not a God who looks down on women. And he's the God who created women as equal image bearers of God himself. And he's not a God who demands blind faith. But he's a God who says, love me with your mind as well as with your heart. And that's one thing that was so troubling about that documentary that you saw. That nobody was willing to answer Madonna's questions about her mother's death when her mother died of breast cancer when Madonna was about 5 years old. Nobody was there to answer questions. I mean, the church of all places ought to be a place that encourages people to process the deepest and the most profound issues that are troubling them. I mean, shouldn't this be the place to come to ask questions? I got a letter recently from a woman who had a very, very negative church experience growing up. And she just started returning to church for the last 4 months. This is what she wrote. Whenever I asked questions while growing up, I was told, you have to have faith. Probably a technically correct statement, she wrote, but I never got my questions answered. So far at Willow Creek, my questions have been taken seriously. I say so far because I'm still waiting for it all to crumble, as I'm sure it will. But I hope it doesn't, because I want so much to believe. She really wants to believe. She wants to know the truth. And I wish that people like her and people like you, when you pull onto this campus or you pull onto the campus of any church, I wish you could picture a big sign that says, questions welcome. Questions welcome. Because there is no sincere question in your mind that God would not want you to ask. No sincere question in your mind. He wouldn't want you to ask. That's why at Willow Creek we have small groups where seekers can go and they can work on these spiritual sticking points that are holding them up in their journey toward God. They can talk them through. They can work through the questions, the issues they have. Because that's how misconceptions that many times come from childhood, that's how they get resolved. In fact, think about your own spiritual journey. Think about a sticking point that may be holding you up. I mean, could it be that the problem between you and God is that He is not the God who you were taught that He is? I think that's Madonna's case. Or could it be that you gave up trying to connect with God because the God that you were taught as you were a child is not a God you would even want to know? I mean, if those things are true, what can you do about it? What can you do? Well, what I would suggest is going to someone who has first-hand knowledge and first-hand life experience with God Himself, with Jesus Christ. I mean, I would say get a hold of a Bible and look for the Gospel of John. Because John was a man who personally knew Jesus. He was a man who listened to the teachings of Jesus with his own ears, and he observed Jesus with his own eyes, and he asked questions of Jesus and received answers of Jesus during Jesus' entire ministry. I mean, let John introduce you to who Jesus really is. Just read through the biography that this eyewitness to Jesus Christ has recorded for us throughout the years. Because my personal experience is this. To know God is to love Him. To know Him is to love Him. And if you say to yourself, you know, conversely, I don't feel like I love God, then maybe it's because you really don't know who He is or what He's really like. And frankly, if that's the case, I think Jesus would say, not only to Madonna, but also to you, I'm sorry that you grew up with a distorted picture of who I am. But now, let's do something about it. So that's maybe the first unexpected thing Jesus would say. What about this second thing He might say to Madonna and to other seekers? I think He would say, I understand. What would He mean by that? I think He would mean this. I think He would mean to say, I understand how living a life without Me can cause you to seek fulfillment in other ways, including ways that are ultimately self-destructive and self-defeating. I understand, Jesus might say, the dynamics of why that happens. I mean, I think you look beyond Madonna's notorious behavior into what prompts her to do what she does. Because, of course, our outward behavior is really just a manifestation of what's going on inside of us. And while I don't want to suggest that Jesus merely excuses our outward behavior, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is I think he would take the time to understand the dynamics of what's driving us to do what we do. Because ultimately, in the end, he can touch us and he can heal us at the inside source of what's driving our outward behavior. Just like Jesus did. In fact, if you read the Gospel of John, when you get to the fourth chapter, you'll read the story about Jesus meeting a woman at a well. And Jesus knew that this woman was living an immoral lifestyle. And while he didn't excuse that, you know what he did? He looked inside of her and he saw how her behavior was being driven by a spiritual void in her life. And so he gave her the spiritual truth that she was so thirsty for, knowing that as she received that and responded to that and understood who he was and began to love him, it would ultimately change her outward behavior. And so what's driving Madonna? What could be driving her? Well, as I read about her, I came across a very interesting interview with her, very revealing, where she talks about this very topic. Let me read to you her quote. She said, "I have an iron will, and all of my will has always been devoted to conquering some horrible feeling of inadequacy. I'm always struggling with that fear. I push past one spell of it and discover myself as a special human being. And then I get to another stage, and I think I'm mediocre and uninteresting. And I find a way to get myself out of that again and again." She said, "My drive in life is from this horrible fear of being inadequate and mediocre. And that's always pushing me and pushing me," she wrote. "Because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove that I'm somebody in capital letters. My struggle has never ended," she said, "and it probably never will." I mean, is that a formula for a life of frustration? I mean, you can see how this is played out in the life of Madonna if you're at all familiar with her life, because every couple of years, Madonna completely reshapes her persona. She comes up with a completely new image, more daring version of herself to sell to the public. And so she's on this treadmill of trying to do something more and more outrageous year after year to try to maintain the interest and the admiration of her fans. Because that's how she feels worthwhile. That's how she feels like she can overcome this feeling that I'm a mediocre and an uninteresting and an inadequate person. Because you see, here's the thing about how we figure out where our value comes from. Psychologists say that our sense of personal worth is based on what we think the most important person in our life thinks about us. That's what our self-worth is based on. What we think the most important person in our life thinks about us. And for Madonna, it seems like the most important person in her life is her fans, because they affirm her value as a person. And so forever, she'll always be in a struggle to try to prove to them that she is somebody in capital letters. And you have to wonder, you know, what is going to happen to her self-esteem when her popularity, as inevitably it will, begins to slip. But think about this. Think about what would happen if Madonna came to an accurate understanding of who Jesus Christ is, and then she started seeing Jesus Christ as being the most important person in her life. What do you think that would do to her sense of self-worth? It would begin to settle her self-worth, wouldn't it? Because she would know, based on reading the Bible, what Jesus thinks of her. I mean, to him, she already is a somebody in capital letters. To him, she is a person who is carved out of the image of God himself. To Jesus Christ, she is a person who he was willing to go to the cross and suffer and die for. That's what he thinks about how valuable she is as a human being. And so can you see how over time, focusing on Jesus as the most important person in her life would begin to diffuse a lot of the struggle that she feels to try to draw her self-worth from her fans. And I think Jesus would say to Madonna, I understand what happens when I'm missing from the core of a person's life. This is the kind of thing that goes on. I understand how you feel compelled to search elsewhere for significance and for affirmation and for acceptance and for self-worth and for fulfillment and for love. And that search has taken you to some dark and to some dangerous places, and you still haven't found what you're looking for. You say so yourself. I think Jesus would say that frustration that you feel stems from the fact that the core of your soul will never be satisfied until I'm there, until I'm the most important person in your life. And maybe you can see that, you know, in the dynamics of your own life, when you think about, well, who is it really who's the most important person in my life? And where am I going to try to measure my value, my self-worth as a person? I mean, do I get my self-worth out of how many promotions that I get at work? Or how big my investment portfolio is? Or how many notches on my bedpost? Or for me, how it used to be, how many bylines I could get on the front page of a newspaper? I mean, that struggle, Madonna herself says, will never end. But Jesus would say that ultimately, if He becomes the most important person in your life, your self-worth is going to be settled. Because He is forever convinced that you are valuable enough for Him to have died for. So what do you do? What do you do in response to that? Well, I think the answer is in the third thing that Jesus might say to Madonna. Because not only do I think Jesus would say, I'm sorry, and I understand, but I think Jesus would go one more step and He would say, I'll help. And even to someone as notorious as Madonna, I think He would say, I will help you. I will help you find the fulfillment that you yourself say has eluded you despite your struggle to find it. I will help heal whatever is driving you to affirm your self-worth in self-destructive ways. But Madonna, I can only help you if you will let me help you. The imagery that the Bible uses so often in the New Testament is the metaphor of adoption. In the fourth chapter of Galatians, it says, God sent His Son, Jesus Christ, so that we might receive adoption as His children. And that imagery kept coming to my mind as I would read these biographies about Madonna and read about how her mother died when she was 5 years old. And how that tragedy in her life has fueled this lifelong search for acceptance. In fact, one former college friend of Madonna said, I felt like she just needed somebody to accept her. No questions asked. She's been on a lifelong quest for that. In effect, she's been like a motherless child who is been looking to be adopted by someone who would just give her unconditional love, no questions asked. And as that imagery of adoption kept circulating in my mind, I came across a really unusual thing I hadn't noticed a few weeks ago. If you ever look in the Sun Times on Sunday, in the classified section, they actually have a classified section called adoption. It surprised me. And where this is a place where childless couples place advertisements to attract the attention of unwed women who are pregnant and who might want to give up their child for adoption. They place these ads. And these ads, you read them and you just cry. They pull at your heartstrings because these couples are so desperate. Say, we've got this love that we want to give to a baby. Let me just read you one of these ads. This ad says, imagine a childless couple providing your baby with overflowing love a wonderland of friends and family, the end of the rainbow, and the best that he or she could be. We're a warm-hearted, caring couple, ready to share our lives, our hearts, and our home. Your baby will have a lifetime of security and stability and happiness with a devoted mother and an adoring dad. And it's got a phone number there. As I was reading these ads, I thought, you know, how vulnerable for people in such a public way to put an ad like that that says, you know, we've got this love that we are aching to pour out on a little child. Please help us do that. And my mind circled back to this imagery in the Bible and how vulnerable God is in the Bible and how He says, you know, I want to help you by giving you the love and the acceptance that you're looking for. But you have to let me do it. You have to let me adopt you. I think if God were to place one of those adoption ads, it might say something like this. He might say, I'll take the person who feels inadequate and who feels mediocre. I'll take the notorious person and the unworthy person. I'll take the person who in their misguided quest for fulfillment has got themselves mired in immorality. I'll take the person who's struggling with unanswered questions. I'll take the person who's on a treadmill of trying to prove that they're somebody in capital letters. And I'll provide a depth of love that you will never find in mere sexuality. And I'll provide a level of fulfillment that you'll never get through materialism. And I'll offer satisfaction that will endure even when the accolades stop. And I'll give you the security of a relationship that will endure all through eternity. And I will give you brothers and I will give you sisters who will love you for who you are, no questions asked. And what kind of a God is this? I mean, what kind of a God says, I don't want to be in the slam dunking business. I want to be in the human reclamation business. I mean, these are the arms that Madonna's been desperately seeking. And maybe for you too. Maybe you, when you think about the things you've been chasing in your life, say, what I really want at the bottom line is a father like that to adopt me into his family. And Jesus says, I'll help you do that. Let's stand for closing prayer. Father, first of all, thanks so much for the way that you've adopted me as your son. Because I spent a long time looking for love and looking for acceptance and recognition in all the wrong places. And when I answered, in effect, an adoption ad like that, and I said, yes, God, I have failed. And I've messed up. And I just want to revel in your complete and total forgiveness. Thank you, God, that you didn't slam dunk me, but you enveloped me in your arms. And you said, Lee, I've waited so long for this moment. And Father, I just pray for those people who are longing to feel that kind of love and acceptance, that they would answer that same kind of ad in that same way. and find, as Bob said earlier, that you are a God who loves to be found. In Jesus' name, amen.